Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today is nobody. It's just me. Yeah, we've continued to have some issues with people moving, people having computer problems, people just being too busy as the holidays ramp up. But me, I'm never busy, except when I'm watching anime. So I figured that with, as I said, the holidays approaching, I'd give you a little bit of me talking, just an old-fashioned radio show, and answer some questions from my hosts, talk about some of the shows I'm watching, and generally just give you a bit of a companion in this season. So first, unsurprisingly, this is from Jeff. He asks, is anime better when it's a little bit evil, and I can interpret that however I like? I mean, I've watched Mitsudemoe, I've watched some pretty execrable stuff, and I've done it as a way of perceiving the full breadth of the medium. At least that's what I told my ex when she was shocked to walk in on me watching this raunchy comedy about grade schoolers. Yeesh. But in general, I do like difficult anime. I like the pushback. I have moved on from the greased up water slide of shonen battlers or shoujo romances where things just kind of lead to another and the premise repeats itself again and again. I also think about, I just watched on Nebula, this is not a plug, we'll never have a Nebula sponsorship, but Lindsay Ellis has a video on there talking about Bluey adults, and one of her big points is just that the science of making sophisticated storytelling in animation has increased so much, and so the stuff that's more auteurish, the stuff that's ugly or inexplicable, you'll be hearing a lot about this coming up, gets me going. We promised when this episode was first planned for it to be about indie anime, and I was going to talk about Fujin Monogatari Windy Tales, which is a show with a very, very unique art style, as in it's these kind of rough draft-like, storyboard-like characters done in this soft color palette. And it's about 20% high schoolers getting airbending powers and 80% what was it like to own a digital camera in the mid-2000s? Like, what were you up to? And I'm glad that those exist. I've said this dozens of times, I'm sure, on various podcasts over the years, but I like stuff that can only exist in anime. And barring some fever dream pilot being made for Frederator a decade ago or being made for Glitch Studios now, I don't think you see that very often. I am going to force someone to watch Windy Tales, and they'll probably say, what the hell was that? And I'll say, just wait for the ED that is just digital photos of the sky. Clearly, they handed out cameras to friends and family or just to the staff of the anime and told them to go nuts. And you kind of get that sort of experimental pleasure from watching a show that's just so rigorously uncommercial, and not even that, just rigorously unstory-like. I also got asked, what's better censorship? Strategic foreground dressing, smooth doll parts, camera framing, mosaic, opaque shadows, steam, hair, etc. Kind of leaning on the last answer, I prefer censorship to be artistically done, like everything. Frame the camera cleverly, obscure the subjects cleverly. I made fun of for years, like Austin Powers joke of, you know, having a teacup in front of nipples and someone bending over at just the right time to obscure something inappropriate. But I like that sort of stuff. I like the acknowledgement that when it's life, when it's undirected life, we are often looking at things from not the best point of view. And I think you can really elevate a work by acknowledging that we often can't see shit in life. And we often have to like let our brain complete the scene. And in fact, I think our brain gets excited by having to complete the scene. I know I mentioned last year watching the 1962 Zatoichi, which is very much as a work concerned with interposed layers between us and what we want to see, appropriately for a show about a blind man, that we kind of just stuff gets in our way in life, and not just in terms of being able to see stuff, I suppose. It makes it feel more grounded. I know that Makine, the Losing Heroines anime that Duncan really enjoyed, is very good about thinking about anime as having a camera, and you have to put the camera someplace, and you can't always just elevate the camera or delete the webbing of a volleyball net or a chain link fence to get the perfect shot. Sometimes shit be messy, and I prefer that. And if we have titty and we can't show titty, then steam, bars on the windows, people standing up at just the appropriate time, I'm fine with that. It's very artificial, but I don't think anime benefits from pretending. That's not true. Often, I think that anime benefits from not necessarily pretending that it's cinema verite, if you know what I mean. Jeff asks, are there any trends I'd like to see die? And are there any I'd like to see return? You know it. You love it. I'm tired of isekai. I'm ready for regular fantasy to come back. One of the shows I watched recently, and I didn't get to talk much about, was Slayer's Try. I watched the first two seasons of Slayers, plus a slate of the movies and OVAs, way back when, 15 years ago maybe, when I was first like getting into anime hardcore as a database animal. And I was not a huge fan of Slayers. I found Megumi Hayashibara's performance as Lena Inverse extremely grating. I didn't know why all the characters were stupid. I thought the plots kind of chased their own tails. They'd get together and they'd try to stop the baddie and they'd get defeated. And then the second core is them regrouping and learning more about the baddie and then going again. But with Slayer's Try, not only because it's also kind of a, I don't want to say filler season, anime original season, as compared to the first two, which I understand are adapting existing printed work, I think it was able to make some improvements and also able to embrace the kind of nightmare off the rails D&D campaign that I think flatters the series' excessive fondness for referential humor a lot better. I think they also benefit by expanding the cast. Philia is the big addition. She's a dragon priestess who spends a lot of time in human form. She's prissy. She's super strong and carries a massive mace that only Gowri, the himbo swordsman, who is kind of Lena's second in command, only he can really lift it. And I think the fantasy trope, especially the D&D trope of a priest character who's just constantly lecturing everybody about morals and being like, hey, guys, we shouldn't steal. We shouldn't be fleecing the local town authorities. And no one listens to her. And eventually they begin to use her dragon form to fly around and they all treat her like a horse. And it just feels very much like this sort of organic in-joke that arises from people kind of playing a bunch of murder hobos. I enjoyed it a fair amount. I forget this because Slayers has like a sci-fi spinoff. It exists in this cosmogony where these like divided worlds are ruled by a god and a demon and they have higher levels. And the plot in Slayer's Try is in fact that there's these gods who have decided to let the like dark god of their reality loose in the reality where Lena and friends inhabit. As a way of containing them, he'll be trapped in this smaller reality, and sure, he'll devour it, but it will take a lot of time, and it might even weaken him, and they can kind of prepare. And so we have this quote-unquote party of these, like, adventurer gods trying to do their own quest and having the party of sociopathic assholes who happen to always do the right thing, even if it involves, you know, letting off a giga slave and blowing up half the continent, having them clash and having them work out. Having them see what plan can fit both of their agendas and who will stand by it and who is a coward or a dumbass or a monster. And if it had to pay lip service to a higher reality, not in terms of there being an overworld inhabited by divine beings, but in terms of there being a separate reality that's our reality so that they can have this sort of diegetic justification for the nonstop stream of real world reference humor, I think it'd be lesser for that. Slayers could work as an isekai, but I do not think it would be as good a show, which is funny to say about something that I think I gave a 6 out of 10 in the end. I don't know. What would I like to see come back? I'm getting this kind of. I'm getting niche historical settings with the slate of court dramas, and y'all heard me be over the moon that we're going to have like a Mongol court drama. But I, as part of my attempt to watch all of the Anime no Chikan shows from 2010, I finally started watching Night Raid 1931, and I liked it a lot, and I'm liking it less as it goes on. It's about a cell of Japanese spies in Shanghai immediately before the Mukden incident that starts the second Sino-Japanese War, effectively the beginning of World War II in that part of the world. And they're all psychic. One's got like a psychometry / telepathy. One has telekinetics, but in a very Harry Houdini spoon bender, deflecting bullets sort of way. It's very grounded in just like, how would you be this small, scrappy spy agency associated with the Japanese army, but not working for them? Although I don't know how much of that is My Lady doth protest too much about the atrocities of the Kuantan army. We'll get into it. But I did really like them just kind of experiencing this city that I only really ever see like dripping with noir imagery in films of the area. I just watched Bertolucci's The Last Emperor, and it was fun to see Puyi show up and then just be shuffled out really quickly, because it's kind of hard to deny what was going on in Manchuria if you look at, you know, the second reign of Puyi as Emperor of Manchukuo. But I did enjoy this very specific historical moment, and then it's kind of lost its way because one of the people has a brother, and he's a Kuangtung army officer who's putting together his own team of psychics. And we get that perennial Japanese fascination when we have speculative fiction about World War II from the Japanese perspective, which is, what if we were scientifically inclined like we became after the war and had a nuke, and we could have stood by some of the principles that were in reality only really propping up imperialist aggression from Japan? We see this in, I talked about it in Zipang, where, as I understand it, a nuclear bomb is used to kind of establish this stable Japan that does not forsake its martial history, but does not give up on the future and become just this predatory warlord state. We see it in one of the cockpit OVAs, where there's a stolen B-17 that's going to drop a nuke on the US and fails in that regard. And we see it here, where the brother of one of the spies shows the League of Nations delegation, said they set off a nuke in the desert around the Tarim Basin. And they are using that to kind of make Pan-Asianism, the idea that all of these formerly colonized territories should unite together and push out the Western invader. And of course, in reality, it was only a pretext for Japan to annex China and invade Burma and Indochina and India and what have you. But the idea that with a nuke backing up their principles, Japan would not need to be as militaristic. I don't know. I wish I could have finished it before I had to record this, but it's Thanksgiving Day. I have a very busy schedule otherwise. And so I figured I'd take the time off to just think about it. Update while editing. The ending was fine. It was more about how the Japanese army uses the idealism of those associated with it to achieve duplicitous ends. But the idea that the history of Asia could be changed if one of the major players had a nuke is nevertheless unrefuted. I don't know. It was good. 7 out of 10. Regardless, I am interested in seeing where it's going to go. And it's nice that I know for a fact it has an ending. I mean, it came out in 2010, so it has a bunch of features that you'd expect for a 2010 anime. It has an episode 00. It has an episode 6.5, an episode 7.5. It has an unaired episode 7 that actually shows the sabotage of the Manchurian Railway that causes the war. I guess they couldn't air that in a Japan that hasn't fully come to grips with its full historical burden in causing a genocidal war in East Asia. It has a DVD-only episode 14, and it has a like short omake chibi OVA. It's deeply 2010s in a lot of ways, which I like. That was when I was first watching anime, and when I wasn't plugged into forums and stuff telling me what to check out, what wasn't worth my time. So I was consuming stuff pretty uncritically. I'm glad I didn't watch this back then. I probably would have found it boring. But now I find the setting interesting. I find the duel between special power people to be kind of a poor man's Bungo Stray Dogs. But I didn't like Bungo Stray Dogs, and I like this a bit better. So yeah, the Japanese militarism is something that I have to come to grips with. And it's a full story, so it's not like Zipang, which I think probably has a more interesting discussion of the moral weight of this speculative fiction versus the real deaths and war and atrocities that came out of this historical moment. But Zipang just stops more abruptly than any anime I can think of besides like Shigurui. And this presumably has a complete ending and even an epilogue if we look at the fact that there's a DVD-only episode. So, yeah. I don't know. I want more stories about a specific Japanese perspective of a specific historical moment, and I'd like them to be less imbued with nationalist anxiety about past crimes. I don't know. I don't think I can praise Vinland Saga enough for how it is just like a portrait of a moment in history and one that's incredibly important and yet poorly understood. So, yeah, I want more of that. Next, assuming unlimited time and resources, are there any genres, series, creators, studios you would like to be a scholar of? I've kind of tried to do this by getting into Sunrise, and unfortunately it means I've watched a lot of mediocre Sunrise. I think the next thing I'm going to watch is Brain Powered, which I'm sure will disappoint me, although it'll be hard to disappoint me as much as Aura Battler, Dunbean. Oh man, it's so whack. I don't know how it's going to turn out. It is the kind of thing I'd like to look after. If I could just like wave a magic wand and know fucking everything, I think that Magical Girls is something that I just have a huge, huge blind spot with. I've watched and enjoyed Sailor Moon. I've watched plenty of deconstructions, and I've loved some, like Utena, and I've been indifferent slash hostile to others, like Madoka. But it would be nice just to know that genre without having to watch a billion Precure. But that's the trick, isn't it? And I don't know, like a specific topic, I am curious, and I think I will never have the time to fully research this, but there's a specific way, I've talked about this before, there's a specific way that the Japanese draw UFOs, where it has kind of a cylindrical top, often with windows around it, and then a conical bottom with three bulges. And I want to know who popularized that look for a UFO, because I know like the flat silver saucer in America comes from a series of hoaxes, and presumably there's a counterpart in Japan, or there's a landmark sci-fi film in the 40s or 50s that locks it into place. And I'd just like to know. And my skills as a historical researcher are atrophying by the day, so it's something that I don't speak the language, so I don't really know how I'd pursue it. But yeah, again, magic wand, just wanting to hoard knowledge. And finally, speaking of hoarding knowledge, Duncan, of course, gives me the heftiest question. I'm not going to do it as extensively as he's written, but I'll run through the highlights. What are shows that I have downloaded on my hard drive that aren't available to buy or stream? And what do I think is important about preserving these? And how do I know with my background in academia to preserve artifacts from hardware failure, bit rot, various forces of decay? It's been nice to see Angel's Egg get a remaster and re-release. I hope to be able to see it in theaters. I'm not sure if I'm going to, but preservation is so important for works because works are not always appreciated in their time, and they can have a shocking, even transformative relevance when they prove to be prescient or prove to be the emblem of an age. And they take such time and effort that it's a shame for anything, even like garbage shovelware from the late 60s and 70s, where it really is just kind of these studios churning out pop cultural ephemera. They're worth preserving because they're things people worked on and they're things people believed in, presumably. I don't think there's any, well, now with AI, I don't know if I can say that, but previously, before 2022, I don't think there's any media work that just has no affection behind it. No one from conception to production to distribution to preservation. Like, someone's got to believe in it. Otherwise, it just wouldn't happen. Money is not enough. As much as we talk about it on the internet, we see very few works that are just entirely a commercial endeavor that no one likes at all. People have to like something to buy it, barring essentials. But yeah, I had a friend whose father is really into baseball, and I showed him Cross Game, and he really wanted to show his father Cross Game, but he doesn't have the technological savvy to watch a bunch of MKV or AVI or MP4, God forbid, OGM files. And I just wonder, like, with Blu-ray importation and the fact that there's increasingly auto-translated subtitles, these aren't lost media specifically, but in terms of having a release targeted to a specific market, I wish that everything could get that kind of treatment. And I do just have it on there because what if corporations find a way to block direct internet downloads and BitTorrenting and IRC uploads. I don't know. I'm also just a hoarder. I was talking to Duncan about how way back when hard drive space wasn't as plentiful, I burned a lot of anime series to dual layer DVDs and really discovered the danger of bit rot there. I remember Full Metal Alchemist, half the episodes just were absolutely corrupted beyond repair. I'd run them through a CRC checker and they just bring out a completely different alphanumeric phrase than was supposed to be. And it's just that stuff is lost if I couldn't re-download it, or in this case, if the anime bubble hadn't recovered and I was able to buy the Blu-rays for $50, like, what would I have done? I don't know. And it's kind of sobering to think of that sort of stuff being lost for you personally, if not for the culture at large, because what's the difference for the experience of an individual? I also think about Sanrio Zetsubou Sensei, which Right Stuff and Nozomi Entertainment was adapting, and they made very clear that it was not profitable. The first season had a very nice booklet. The second season has a piece of paper with a QR code that redirects you to a website that'll go down someday or have to be archived. And that sucks. And subsequent seasons are not going to be regionalized and released in the West because there's no money in it now that Sony owns everything. And as we advance in time, Koji Kumita's admittedly mundane and quotidian complaints about life will be less and less legible to an audience that, you know, wasn't alive at the time or wasn't in Japan at the time. And it's kind of too bad. It's why I actually owned Ergo Proxy on DVD and on Blu-ray, but I still have the Shinsen Subs AVIs because, and people made fun of these at the time, they are way over extensive translator and research notes. But now to read them, it's a tragedy that there's no commercial basis for these kind of heavily annotated anime that not only make the language accessible, but the ideas behind it, and even the inspirations, the international inspirations, accessible to an audience. And even if they do get a release, like Karikano, speaking of Nozomi Entertainment, I was rewatching the DVDs, which are wonderful, by the way. If you can get them, they have all the on-screen text is translated with formatted, color-coded. It's like the nicest fan subs you've ever seen, but these are terrible quality scans. There's artifacting all around the lines. There's really bad telescene issues. The Blu-rays, which were only released in Japan, have denoising and cropping problems that make them just objectively less complete in small but noticeable ways than the DVD versions. And I don't know, is that an archival copy? An archival copy with so many issues? I can't say. It is a shame that there isn't just a really nice HD rescan. But even in the case of something like Evangelion, which has every reason to look great, there's still the one episode, I believe it's the day Tokyo 3 stood still, that is only accessible on Laserdisc. They lost the master, and so it's an upscaled Laserdisc scan surrounded by all these reshot and remastered film prints. And it's so noticeable. And to imagine that the quality of that one episode was the quality of all we had, we're losing things bit by bit. And granted, that's the nature of Time's Arrow, is that we lose everything. We lose every moment in the future to the past. But I don't know. I want to encourage people to be collectors, digital collectors, physical collectors. I think honestly, being a true collector does mean inevitably you will commit some kind of piracy, even if it's how our corporations have redefined piracy to mean the purchase of used copies instead of new. I think it's important for everybody to have this little treasure trove, because you never know, either in your social circle or in the broader community or fandom, you never know when it's going to be important. As a historian, I worked a lot with Italian diplomatics, letters, treaties, bills of sale, notarized documents. And there are so many instances where this old Italian family in Florence or Turin or Vercelli or Cuneo brings out this drawer of parchment, and they just have stuff from like the 13th century in there, and it adds to our knowledge immeasurably. Even one document could be the basis of someone's dissertation. I mean, not now that academia is being destroyed by the current administration, but it was already on its way out. But anyway, having your own little treasure trove makes you a historian. Keeping things that you could have thrown away makes you a story. And I'm not saying to go out and become a hoarder, because an undifferentiated collection is a garbage heap. But having a set of things that are important to you and that you feel should stand the test of time, you are part of that. And I can't help myself. I have 4 DVD cases and a 5 terabyte hard drive. I need to get another hard drive. I'm running out of room. Downloading the 2010 Three Kingdoms TV show and the like. But yeah, I can't help it. I want to keep stuff so I can share it, to share stuff that my past self loved with my current self, and to share it with other people, and just to have it so that I can have an opinion on it, so that, you know, to keep the signal going, to make sure that these moments in the culture of the media landscape I love aren't lost to delisting from streaming and limited run prints and decaying Blu-rays and DVDs and crashing on hard drives or write limits on solid state drives. Yeah, I don't know. Preserve everything, if you can, within reason. And speaking of sharing stuff that my past self loved with my current self, you've had to wait a few months, but I did go back and rewatch the first few episodes of Evangelion, which is how I was reminded of the one non-fully HD episode. And I did watch the first few episodes of Turn A Gundam to settle that bet between Duncan and Andy so many weeks ago. And I thought about how to answer this. I thought about a third option just to troll them, but I'm a giving person. And honestly, if I had to answer it, the question was, is my favorite anime Neon Genesis Evangelion, or is my favorite anime Turn A Gundam? And I'm not going to think about what an indictment it is for who I am and who I thought I was, that these are both mecha shows, something I used to think I was better than. But I have to answer that my favorite anime is definitely Turn A Gundam. I think that Evangelion is the best anime ever made. I think it is a work of emotional, psychological, and philosophical art that deeply challenges us, like I talked about at the beginning of this short little episode, deeply challenges us to consider how we relate to the world and the people around us, and what the end of the world looks like, given those constraints of our knowledge, perception, and understanding. And I'll be damned if I don't cry every time I watch End of Evangelion. But in terms of just this rich, nourishing work that embodies what I think anime is best at doing, I cannot help but say that everyone and their mother should watch Turn A Gundam. I think it has beautiful characters. It asks questions about identity, and I think it comes to a sort of beautiful synthesis. And I'm going to be citing the excellent video by Pyramid Inu about this, but I do think it admits that what makes us who we think we are is largely circumstantial. Where you're born, what hardships, what triumphs you experience in life, who you surround yourself with, these are the main components of our personality. There's very little to us that is entirely innate. And what makes me love Turn A Gundam is that it sees that as liberating, as a triumph. If there's something about us that we find cruel or evil or cowardly or unworthy, we can change that. It was circumstance that made us who we are, and circumstance can make us someone else. And we are free to be our best selves, and nothing is impossible as long as we embrace that realm of possibility. And it does that against a backdrop that asks, you know, Tomino's typical fascinations about what causes wars, who owns land, when is violence justified, how do we take this vast sea of human accidents and make a society, something that I love in Deadwood, in Mad Men, is present in this goofy show about humans invading Edwardian America from the moon. It's great. So I forget what the prize is, but yeah, that's the side I come down on. So remember, rate, review, and subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Email us questions at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. If you must, search for Keyframes Podcast. Find us on Blue Sky. Hopefully Andy will get up to blooping again there. Keyframes Pod. And most of all, tell a friend. Tell a friend who, despite everyone else canceling on him, decides to throw a party alone and makes it last almost half an hour nonetheless through his interminable palaver and over-intellectualized opinions. I love you all. We couldn't do it without you. And Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays. Let's make next year a good one. Goodbye.